Morning. It's great to be here in Scotland. It's a real privilege to be here. Liberton Kirk has been so faithful over the years in supporting Self-Help Africa and the people in the different countries we support that are trying to help those in tackle hunger and poverty. And so we really appreciate the support that you've given. In fact, the main reason I wanted to come this morning was simply to thank you for your commitment to transforming the lives of those people. So thank you very much. I've actually come up from Loughborough this weekend. Has anyone been to Loughborough here? No one. Oh, someone right at the back. Oh, well, that's good. For those of you that don't know England very well, it's just south of Nottingham. I live down there with my wife and two kids. Their only experience of Scotland, my children this is last year we went to a friend's wedding celebration, which was on this kind of campsite by the beach, sunny weather the whole time, it was like kind of games 24/7, and a whole gang of friends that all got made in that time. So they're incredibly jealous that I've got to come back to Scotland again. I suspect that they might not be so pleased, at least with the weather, if they ever come back again. But I've actually only been working for Self-Help Africa for about 6 months now, talking to churches about how we're working towards an Africa free from hunger. For those of you that are unfamiliar with us, for almost 30 years we've been working with primarily rural communities to help them improve the farms and their livelihoods, tackling the poverty and hunger that blights around 234 million people in sub-Saharan Africa. I visited Kenya this July, and I had the privilege of meeting many of those trying to do something about the problem of hunger and food security out there. So they were the kind of Kenyan nationals who operate our office out there, making sure really that your money is being used wisely and effectively and that it's really making a difference. And I also met many of the farmers who have benefited from the support your money has provided. It's not been a handout that has allowed them to kind of slacken off, but really it's been a kind of a hand up. It's been a catalyst that has enabled them with their own hard work to see their food supply go from often two or fewer meals a day to a steady three, with enough money left occasionally for things like schooling and healthcare for their children. And one of the things that really popped out to me when I was in Kenya was just how noticeable issues of prayer and faith were to their lives, and they were kind of really central things there. And so I'm going to do the reading in a minute, but just before I do, I just wanted to kind of say that since I've had that job, particularly since being out there, I've just been struck again and again how much of the Bible has been written in a rural context, and a rural peasant context at that. And I guess it's one of those things that we all know on one level, but actually, when you really start kind of looking at it from another angle, it kind of just kind of time and time again pops out at you, little metaphors and imagery and parables such as today's gospel reading, which is, as you'll agree, one of the best. I'm actually going to do something slightly different. Normally, when we get this in the lectionary, you kind of get the end of the story and then we leap kind of straight to the explanation. What I'm going to do today is I'm just going to read the story, not because I have any issues with the explanation. But I think sometimes, if Jesus had just wanted us to say, don't kind of get caught up in the things of life, then he could just have said that. But actually, he chose to give us a story. And some of the different elements that brings in different ways, it helps us look at it. So I'm going to read the whole thing. And as the later bit has already been covered, I'll not be looking at that so much today. Again, Jesus began to teach by the lake. The crowd that gathered round him was so large that he got into a boat and sat in it out on the lake, while all the people were along the shore by the water's edge. He taught them many things by parables, and in his teaching said, "Listen, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but when the sun came, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants so that they did not bear grain. Still other seed fell fell on good soil. It came up, grew, and produced a crop, multiplying 30, 60, or even 100 times. Then Jesus said to them, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." We tend to call this story the parable of the sower. And yet, actually, if you were listening really carefully, you'd notice that in the NIV, it doesn't even actually mention the word sower. It does in the original Greek. But it's very interesting straight away that we all automatically come to talk about a sower, which is a thing we don't really relate to at all. We can relate to farmers, but actually, sowers, you know, we don't, even our farmers don't kind of have people that sow in the way that used to be done then. And I'm always keen when I see these places where we put barriers in between the kind of the natural experience and the everydayness that Jesus invests in so many of his stories and our own experience, that we get rid of those. But nevertheless, if this were about the parable of the farmer or the sower, then it might revolve around the importance of using your seed wisely, taking time to sow in the right places, perhaps not to sow in places where there's path and weeds. It's not even, I'd suggest, the parable of the seed. It's a bit unclear, if you look at the three different versions of the story, we have this in the Bible, what the actual precise meaning of the seed is. But in any case, this story is only really about seed in the same way that the Lord of the Rings is about an item of jewellery. Actually, this is a parable about the soil. If the soil is full of weeds, or it's too thin, or even if it's absent entirely, in other words, if the soil is in a poor condition, then the plant is done for. And even good seed and the farmer's hard work will come to nothing. Can we just skip on a few slides? Sorry, I've forgotten that they're up there and I can see them. That's me in Kenya. Okay. It's typical of human nature when we hear a parable such as this, we tend to try to quickly relate it to our own experience rather than taking the time to think about the world into which it was spoken. Most of us can perhaps distantly remember walking through kind of sun-drenched fields of corn swelling with huge kind of things of golden wheat swaying gently in the breeze. And it's easy to picture a scene like this when we hear the parable and miss some of the subtleties there in the story. So we can be fooled, for example, into thinking that the percentage wasted by sun, weeds, and birds is fairly low. The roads and rocky areas were just kind of around the very edges of the field, and that the amount lost is fairly insignificant. Or perhaps we can imagine that, you know, the farmer is foolish or unthinking or lazy. If he just took a bit more care, he could either take out the weeds and stones first or be a bit more careful around the paths. But of course, in Jesus' day, farming wasn't about vast fields and farming business. The people Jesus ministered amongst were landless and poor. Farming wasn't about cash crops, it was about basic subsistence, about eking out just about enough to get by on to feed your family. Most of the farmers didn't own the land they rented, they owned the land they farmed, they rented it from a small rich elite, putting up with the faults of whatever they could afford. Yes, improvements could be made, but if the soil in your field was poor, there was only so much that could be done about it. Whilst farming in this country and many industrialised nations has moved on, in many places in today's world, the situation is still surprisingly similar. The context the Bible was written in is far closer to today's rural African context than either world is to our own. Many farmers living in rural Africa are still living at or below subsistence level, on small parcels of land they do not own. The soils in Africa often have poor fertility. Not only do they lack volcanic rejuvenation, but fertility is being run down, perhaps by inappropriate land use or management that could be improved, or by a lack of new nutrients being added back into the soil. As with today's reading, the quality of the soil that makes a big difference. Can we click on to the next? Yeah, great. This is a picture, it's not a particularly good picture, I'm afraid, but of a lady called Dame, who is the 1 second on your left, and her husband and their children who are from Togo in West Africa. And they had a small plot there, but their yields were declining. And they and their children were reduced to living off just one meal a day for 5 months of every year. The soil was poor and was gradually getting worse, meaning there was likely to be even less food in the future for Dame and her children. However, in 2011, Self-Help Africa started a soil conservation project in Dame's area. Farmers were taught about low-cost methods to improve their soil, such as compost pits. It's eye pits and stone buns, which we've already seen. And these are all methods to kind of improve soil fertility and crop yields. Next one as well. And one after that. Right. I'm grateful for Gary for being so flexible this morning, because I turned up with about 10, 15 minutes to go and did the thing that whenever I do this job at my own church, I hate, which is said, I've got a slight memory stick here with all the things on. Can you put it on? When he's trying to sort everything out. So I'm very grateful for him being so accommodating. I'm not sure I'd have had as much grace. But so they went to one of our workshops anyway, Dame, and went to one of our workshops and learnt there out some of these methods, such as compost pits, stone buns and zai pits, and ways that essentially were to improve soil fertility and crop yields. And a well was dug, and farmers were provided with improved varieties of seed, such as corn, soya, and sorghum. They were also shown how to create low-cost organic compost from the non-edible parts of the crops. As a result of that investment, things have dramatically improved for Dame and her family. They now have two or three meals a day, all the year round, and can afford other essential items, such as schooling and clothing. It's a modern example of how the type of soil can make a difference. Dame's family know, just as Jesus knew, that what we sow into makes a difference. So there are three things I want to look at from this passage before I close this morning. Firstly, it's that how what we might think of as simple, small things can make a real difference. The seeds that land in poor soil, but when it lands in good soil, we see it multiply by 30, 60, or 100 times, just because, you know, perhaps it landed here in the good soil rather than here in the poor soil. And it's actually these simple but effective improvements that go to the very heart of who Self-Help Africa are and what we try to do. Our low-cost, sustainable solutions provide practical help where it's most needed. It's not about kind of bringing in huge bits of kit that run the risk of kind of falling into disrepair. It's about making small changes, sharing knowledge that often different areas, different parts of Africa, different parts of the same country have, and trying to find solutions that will go around longer term, and small investments such as things like seed. Can I have a look at the next slide? This is great. This is a guy called Paul, he was there with one of the groups that I met when I was out there, who you saw in the previous one. And the group out there actually is not just trying to farm for themselves. They're also caring for a group of young children that have been made orphans by AIDS. And this group had kind of mastered hoeing the soil in such a way that kind of minimizes water loss from the soil. And just simple things like that, actually, not losing the soil because you hoe in a certain way. Not losing the moisture in the soil because you hoe in a certain way. Actually makes a surprisingly large amount of difference. Water is a very key technique out there. Another of the techniques we're looking at the moment out there is intercropping. Have any of you keen allotment people here heard of intercropping? No? Okay, some places, went somewhere yesterday and they'd all heard of it, and I was a bit like, oh, really? essentially, intercropping is a bit like crop rotation, only instead of doing a different one in each field each time, you do the two crops in one field that kind of complement each other. So you have one that takes nitrogen out of the soil and another one that puts it back in. It's not expensive, but it's actually wildly effective. But it's still not that well known in a lot of these parts of the country. We're also doing a lot to do with irrigation. The other week it leapt out at me that there's one thing that us Brits always think about when we think about farming, yet that Jesus didn't actually mention in this parable. Does anyone want to shout out what the thing it was? Yeah, where specifically? Rain, yeah, okay. We always, you know, when it rains, if we're feeling positive, we all say, oh, yeah, it's good for the farmers, isn't it? That's almost, you know, but actually Jesus doesn't mention that at all. And irrigation is actually really key for many areas of Africa, as I'm sure you can imagine. But one of the surprising things is that where I was in Kenya, the annual amount of rainfall for that region, the Karoo region, is actually more or less the same as it is in Loughborough, where I'm from. I think it's probably a little bit higher up here, but it was quite surprising. But the difference is, of course, that in Nakuru, it falls all in 2 months. Whereas we get it through 12 months, they get it all in 2 months, and then they have 10 months of baking sun. And so we've been working with them, looking at ways of harvesting water. So gaining water off rooftops and even off the roads. There's a guy there called Joseph who started an initiative so that when their roads flood in the summer, now they don't, because he got excited about this idea, got a group of his friends together and worked out a way of diverting the water so that they not only got clear, passable roads, but they also had extra water for irrigation. This is Paul here, as I said, and I went and had a meal at one of his partners' houses around the corner. But between the two men's houses, there was this kind of little tiny courtyard, and it was kind of crisscrossed with all these drain pipes going from the tops of roofs to water tanks. And these tanks were kind of properly covered and was in this big kind of shady area, so they weren't losing water from evaporation. And then they were being used in kind of very precise methods of irrigation, so the water was going right to where the plant needed it rather than just going into the general soil. Fairly simple things, but making a big difference. The second thing I want to take away from this passage is also how much things can vary down to seed. So Jesus says that some produce 30, others 60, others 100. And actually, seed is a key element for us. We've been looking at different varieties of seed that even that produce the same crop can have very different results. So different natural varieties, some have a shorter wet season, or they're more resilient to rain, or they do better in the sun, they're more drought resistant. And by using those same natural variations in different places, that actually gives a much better chance of crops. But there's also something else about this thing of 30, 60 and 100 that I want to touch on. Because actually, the expected crop might have been around 7 seeds for every 1 seed that was planted, rather than 30, 60, 100 to 1, you would perhaps expect about 70. So it's about 7. And so what Jesus envisages here isn't just a kind of nice version of business as usual. It's actually something radical. It's actually a kind of kingdom of God radical break. If your expectations, if you put yourself in that situation, if your expectations are just for a harvest of 7 times what you planted, but instead you get 100, something has shifted. It's possible that life will never be the same again. As I mentioned earlier, most of the farmers in Jesus' day and in Africa today are farming on other people's land, often the land belonging to a rich elite who gained it by being faithful to the previous empires, be that the previous Roman Empire in Jesus' day or the previous British Empire, as is the case in Kenya today. A lot of land is still owned out there by people that gained it during the days of the British Empire. Meanwhile, the peasants working the land are scraping by on less than they need. The high demand for land means that farmers can charge higher rents. And so for the farmers, the odds are against them exceeding their current state of life. But imagine that all of a sudden, your harvest suddenly became a record 100 times what you put in. You could actually break out of that injustice. You could buy your own land back. You could buy some of the land of yourself. You could offer it to other people at a more reasonable rent. And so there's actually something, there's actually a bigger picture going on here than just simply a case of, you know, a nice story with a few different meanings. I think there's a level to which Jesus is envisaging the kingdom of God, a new order where these kind of oppressive and unjust powers will be overthrown and replaced by God's vision of justice. Lastly, this shows me that God knows about the people in Africa that we are all trying to help. He knows them intimately. There may be 234 million people hungry in sub-Saharan Africa, one in four. But to him, they're all individuals. So here's a critical theological truth. God only sees people one at a time. God knows the people in Africa we are trying to help as individuals. He knows them intimately. Every hair on their heads has been counted. He doesn't just know that they are farmers. He knows that they are cassava, groundnut, and green grandfathers from near Makegi, near Rungai, in the Kaidalo district in Nakuru County in Kenya. He understands them. He gets their hopes. He knows what the crushing defeat of a failed harvest feels like. I first met Paul here in a field after we'd driven along for about half an hour on a road that was almost completely impassable. It had poured down the night before. And so in addition to the road being rutted and uneven, most of it was muddy and largely underwater. And as I've said, Paul leads this group that produces food not only for themselves but also for these children. And I wanted just to play a very little clip of him explaining a little bit about the difference. The slide, I've written that basically what he says, but I just kind of feel it just gives you that level of connection. So basically, he says on the side of food security, what can I say? As I said, I got this wrong. Can we have the next one up? Oh dear, I'm sorry, I've done that wrong. Basically, says on the side of food security, what can I say? Before we were in a situation where food insecurity was a real problem for us. You know, we weren't getting food we needed. But now, our members are able to have natural food storage and food security. Shah, as they all call us out there, has assisted us and has helped us a lot. And Paul's just one of the hundreds of thousands of individuals we're able to help in Kenya and the eight other countries we work in, thanks to the support of people like you and churches like this one and the money that you give. We've been able to help Paul and the other members of this group significantly reduce their risk of hunger. We were able to help that group with goats, which provide milk and cheese, a vital source of regular protein through the year. We were able to help with water storage, basic beekeeping equipment, as well as running training courses in better ways to manage the soil that is so critical to their survival. And going there, it was clear that this was a community that had been transformed from being trapped by the whims of the weather to having a more stable and resilient food supply, as well as a more varied diet and better nutrition. And in the 6 months I've worked at Self Help Africa, I've heard stories like that time and again. And actually, we've been able to do that because of churches such as this one and people like you have given generously to help. When I said at the start of the service that it was a privilege to be here, it wasn't just a kind of a nice way to grease the wheels of a talk, but it's because we're so very grateful for your gifts. And so thank you. And just to leave you with a couple of thoughts. Firstly, sometimes the problems in Africa can seem overwhelming. They can seem such big numbers, you know, what difference can we make? But actually, the statistics are actually showing that those numbers are coming, that those proportions are coming down, that there are fewer people now in Africa that are that are hungry now than when I first started. About 10 years ago, it was one in three. Now it's one in four. Now that's still one in four too many. But actually, that's a significant change. And things are improving, and a difference is being made. And it is a difference that's been made person by person, farmer by farmer, and farming community by farming community. And so I'd like to just end by reading a bit from Paul in Galatians, chapter 6, verses 8 to 10. Where Paul also talks about sowing seed, perhaps also riffing on what he knew of Jesus' parable. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people. Amen. Just before I hand on, there's some stuff at the table over there. One of the things we'd really like to do is we'd really like to be able to kind of keep reporting back to you so you kind of know what actually we're doing. So there's a list there for email addresses, and I think we'd send something out about 6 times a year. It also helps us keep our costs down a bit. There's also some of these boxes. I'm very excited about these because I did these from scratch, and they're finally here. They've just arrived. So if you need somewhere to keep your change in and stop your pockets from wearing out, these are ideal. It would be really good to talk to some of you afterwards. We've got various other forms, direct debit forms and that kind of thing as well. So thank you very much for that.